We entered through the main doorway to the audience hall of the Grand Vizier's palace. Pharaoh paused at the threshold. Although the wound from Rasfa's sword was slight, I had bandaged it with linen and placed his arm in a sling. Pharaoh surveyed the hall slowly. At the far end of the long room stood the Grand Vizier's throne. Carved from a solid block of alabaster, it was hardly less imposing than Pharaoh's own in the throne room at Elephantine. The high walls were plastered with smooth clay, and on this background were painted some of the most impressive frescoes that I had ever designed. They transformed the huge room into a blazing garden of delights. I had painted them while I was Lord Intef's slave, and even though they were my own creations, they still gave me a deep thrill of pleasure when I looked upon them. I have no doubt that these works alone, without consideration of any other of my achievements, would support my claim to the title of the most significant artist in the history of our land. It was sad that I, who had created them, was now to demolish them. It detracted from the triumph of this tumultuous day. I led Pharaoh down the hall. For once we had dispensed with all the protocol, and Pharaoh was as eager as a child. He followed me so closely that he almost trod upon my heels, and his royal train fell in as eagerly behind him. I led them to the throne wall, and we stopped below the huge mural depicting the sun god Amun-Ra on his daily journey across the heavens. Even in his excitement I could see the reverent expression in the king's eyes as he looked up at the painting. Behind us the great hall was half filled with the king's train. The courtiers and the warriors and the noble lords, to say nothing of the royal wives and concubines, who would rather have given up all their rouges and paint-boxes of cosmetics than miss such an exciting moment as I had promised them. Naturally, my mistress was in the forefront. Tanus marched only a pace behind the king. He and his blues had taken over the duties of the royal bodyguard. The king turned back to Tanus now. "Have your men bring forward the Lord Intef." Treating him with elaborate and icy courtesy, Kratas led Intef to face the wall. But he interposed himself between the prisoner and the king, and stood with his naked blade at the ready. "Taita, you may proceed," the king told me. And I measured the wall, stepping out exactly 30 paces from the furthest corner, and marking the distance with the lump of chalk that I had brought with me for the purpose. "Behind this wall lie the private quarters of the Grand Vizier," I explained to the king. "Certain alterations were made when last the palace was renovated. Lord Intef likes to have his wealth close at hand." "Sometimes you are garrulous, Taita." Pharaoh was less than captivated by my lecture on the palace architecture. "Get on with it, fellow. I am aflame to see what is hidden here." "Let the masons approach," I called out. And a small band of these sturdy rogues in their leather aprons came down the aisle and dropped their leather tool bags at the foot of the throne wall. I had summoned them across the river from their work on Pharaoh's tomb. The white stone dust in their hair gave them an air of age and wisdom that few of them deserved. I borrowed a wooden set square from their foreman, and with it marked out an oblong shape on the clay-plastered wall. Then I stepped back and addressed the master mason. "Gently now. Damage the frescoes as little as you can. They are great works of art." With their wooden mallets and their chisels of flint, they fell upon the wall, and they paid little heed to my strictures. Paint and plaster flew in clouds as slabs of the outer wall were stripped away and thumped to the marble floor. The dust offended the ladies, and they covered their mouths and noses with their shawls. Gradually, from under the layer of plaster, emerged the outline of the stone blocks. Then Pharaoh exclaimed aloud, and ignoring the flying dust, he drew closer and peered at the design that appeared from beneath the plaster skin. The regular courses of stone blocks were marred by an oblong of alien-coloured stone that followed almost exactly the outline I had chalked upon the outer layer of plaster. "There is a hidden door in there," he cried. "Open it immediately." Under the king's urging, the masons attacked the sealed doorway with a will, and once they had removed the keystone, the other blocks came out readily. A dark opening was revealed, and Pharaoh, who had by now taken charge of the work, called excitedly for torches to be lit. "The entire space behind this wall is a secret compartment," I told Pharaoh, while we waited for the torches to be brought to us. "I had it constructed on Lord Intef's orders." When the torches were brought, Thanos took one of them and lit the king's way into the gaping secret door. The king stepped through, and I was the next to enter after him and Thanos. It was so long since I had last been in there that I looked around me with as much interest as the others. Nothing had changed in all that time. The chests and casks of cedar and acacia wood were stacked exactly as I had left them. I pointed out to the king those cases to which he should first devote his attention, and he ordered, "Have them carried out into the audience hall." "You will need strong men to carry them," I remarked dryly. "They are rather heavy." It took three of the biggest men of the Blues to lift each case, and they staggered out through the jagged opening in the wall with them. "I have never seen these boxes before," Lord Intef protested, as the first of them was carried out and laid on the dais of the Grand Vizier's throne. "I had no knowledge of a secret chamber behind the wall. It must have been built by my predecessor, and the cases placed there at his command." "Your Majesty, observe the seal on this lid." I pointed it out to him, and the king peered at the clay tablet. "Whose seal is this?" he demanded. "Observe the ring on the left forefinger of the Grand Vizier, Majesty," I murmured. "May I respectfully suggest that Pharaoh match it to the seal on this chest?" "Lord Intef, hand me your ring, if you please," the king asked with exaggerated courtesy. And the Grand Vizier hid his left hand behind his back. "Great Egypt, this ring has been on my finger for 20 years. My flesh has grown around it, and it cannot now be removed." "Lord Thanos," the king turned to him, "take your sword, remove Lord Intef's finger, and bring it to me with the ring upon it." Thanos smiled cruelly as he stepped forward to obey, half drawing his blade. "Perhaps I am mistaken," Lord Intef admitted with alacrity. "Let me see if I cannot free it." The ring slipped readily enough from his finger, and Thanos went down on one knee to hand it to the king. Pharaoh bent studiously over the chest and made the comparison of the ring to seal. When he straightened up again, his face was dark with anger. "It is a perfect match. This seal was struck from your ring, Lord Intef." But the Grand Vizier made no reply to the accusation. He stood with his arms folded and his expression stony. "Break the seal, open the chest," Pharaoh ordered, and Thanos cut away the clay tablet and prized up the lid with his sword. The king cried out involuntarily as the lid fell away and the contents were revealed. "By all the gods!" And his courtiers crowded forward without ceremony to gaze into the chest, exclaiming and jostling each other for a better view. "Gold!" The king scooped both hands full with the glittering yellow rings, and then let them cascade back between his fingers. He kept a single ring in his hand and held it close to his face to study the mint marks upon it. 2 deben weight of fine gold. How much will this case contain, and how many cases are there in the secret storeroom? His question was rhetorical, and he was not expecting an answer, but I gave him a reply nonetheless. "This case contains," I read the manifest that I had inscribed on the lid so many years before, "it contains 1 tuck and 300 deben of pure gold. As to how many cases of gold, if my memory serves me well, there should be 53 of gold and 23 of silver in the store. However, I have forgotten exactly how many chests of jewellery we hid here." "Is there no one I can trust? You, Lord Intef, I treated as my brother. There was no kindness that you did not receive from my hands. And this is how you have repaid me?" At midnight, the Chancellor and the Chief Inspector of the Royal Taxes came to the King's chamber where I was changing the dressing on his injured arm. They presented their final tally of the amount of the treasure, and Pharaoh read it with awe. Once again his emotions warred with each other, outrage vying with euphoria at the staggering windfall. The rogue was richer than his own king. There is no punishment harsh enough for such evil. He has cheated and robbed me and my tax collectors. As well as murdering and plundering Lord Harab and tens of thousands of your subjects, I reminded him, as I secured the bandage on his arm. It was perhaps impudent of me. However, he was by now so deep in my debt that I could risk it. That, too, he agreed readily enough, my sarcasm wasted upon him. His guilt is deep as the sea and high as the heaven. I will have to devise a suitable punishment. The strangler's rope is too kind for Lord Intef. "Majesty, as your physician, I must insist that you rest now. It has been a day that has taxed even your great strength and endurance. Where is Intef? I cannot rest until I am assured that he is well taken care of." "He is under guard in his own quarters, Majesty. A senior captain and detachment of the Blues have that duty." I hesitated delicately. "Rasfer is also under guard." "Rasfer? That ugly, drooling animal of his. The one who tried to kill you in the Temple of Osiris, did he survive the crack that Lord Tanos gave him?" "He is well, if not happy, Pharaoh," I assured him. "Did your Majesty know that Rasfer is the one who so long ago used the gelding knife upon me?" I saw the beam of pity in the king's eye as I blurted it out. "I will deal with him as I deal with his master," Pharaoh promised. "He will suffer the same punishment as Lord Intef. Will that satisfy you, Taita?" "Your Majesty is just and omniscient." I backed out of his presence and went to find my mistress. She was waiting for me, and although it was after midnight and I was exhausted, she would not let me sleep. She was far too overwrought, and she insisted that for the rest of the night I sit beside her bed and listen to her chatter about Tanos and other topics of lesser importance. Despite the dearth of sleep, I was bright and clear-headed when I took my place in the Temple of Osiris the following morning. If anything, the congregation was even larger than it had been the day before. There was not a soul in Thebes who had not heard of the downfall of the Grand Vizier, and who was not eager to witness his ultimate humiliation. Even those of his underlings, who had most prospered under his corrupt administration, now turned upon him like a pack of hyena who devour their leader when he is sick and wounded. The barons of the Shrikes were led before the throne in their rags and bonds, but when Lord Intef entered the temple he wore fine linen and silver sandals. His hair was freshly curled, his face painted, and the chains of the gold of praise hung around his neck. The barons knelt before the king, but even when one of the guards pricked him with the sword, Lord Intef refused to bend the knee, and the king made a gesture for the guard to desist. "Let him stand," the king ordered. "He will lie in his tomb long enough." Then Pharaoh rose and stood before us in all his grandeur and his rage. This once he seemed a true king, as the first of his dynasty had been, a man of might and force. I, who had come to know him and his weaknesses so well, found that I was overcome with a sense of awe. "Lord Intef, you are accused of treason and murder, of brigandage and piracy, and of 100 other crimes no less deserving of punishment. I have heard the supported testimony of 50 of my subjects, from all walks and stations of life, from lords and freemen and slaves. I have seen the contents of your secret treasury, wherein you hid your stolen wealth from the royal tax collectors. I have seen your personal seal upon the treasure chests. By all these matters your guilt is proven 1,000 times over. I, Mamoza, the 8th of that name, Pharaoh and ruler of this very Egypt, hereby find you guilty of all the crimes of which you are accused, and deserving of neither royal clemency nor mercy." "Long live Pharaoh!" shouted Tanos, and the salute was taken up and repeated 10 times by the people of Thebes. "May he live for ever!" When silence fell, Pharaoh spoke again. "Lord Intef, you wear the gold of praise. The sight of that decoration on the breast of a traitor offends me." He looked across at Tanos. "Centurion, remove the gold from the prisoner." Tanos lifted the chains from Lord Intef's neck and carried them to the king. Pharaoh took the gold in his two hands, but when Tanos started to withdraw, he stayed him with a word.